This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com and on the air right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Where this week, we have someone who we haven't spoken to in a little while now. She is one I like to call a fixer, just like if you watch Scandal on ABC, I guess it is, Olivia Pope. Yeah, she is a real-life version of Olivia Pope. Walking, talking, breathing, real-life version. Her name is Kirsten Todd. She runs a company called Liberty Group Ventures, which handles risk management, mediation of things, mitigation of problems. You name it, they can do it. You give her a call, and she already knows what your issue is. And she's here with me today. How are you?
Hi, Alan. Good to see you.
Fortune 500 companies are your favorites? Any company is your favorite. We got a lot to talk about
because there's been a lot going on.
There's been a lot of screw ups lately. A lot of people have done a lot of stuff. I want to start off with the president, something that's on the tip of everyone's minds, and it has to do with Obamacare. I'm doing the air quotes. Healthcare.gov, big failure at this point. What are your thoughts as we talk about this?
Well, it's obviously a real challenge, and there are issues that have come up since the release of Healthcare.gov, since it's been executed, that it just appears were not thought through. And the challenge with something like this is that when you launch it, you don't have a lot of leeway for error. And whether or not, however you judge the error, the point is that there's been enough that this is going to be hard to recover from. And at the end of the day, too, it's as much about the platform issue for the President of the United States as it is about making sure everybody has the appropriate health care. So we've got, you know, two challenges that have arisen as a result of what is a failure and how to recover from it.
Do you truly believe the president wasn't in the know about how bad this was before the launch? I mean, they're saying that the last minute changes of making a few fields mandatory is what basically slowed this thing down. All the pieces worked independently, but when we put them together, it kind of fell apart.
Well, I think there easily could have been people who were managing it and were in control of it that were making some last minute decisions that they had the authority to make.
Sure.
And so it wasn't that the president wasn't in the know, but he obviously can't be a part of every decision. And he delegated authority for these issues to certain people with the understanding that they would make the right decision. So I don't feel that it's, you know, our president's disconnected from a policy or a program, but more that the people who he entrusted with a tremendous amount of authority and responsibility failed.
Right. The big thing that stood out in my mind and is still standing out to a lot of people is, let me get something straight. You will not lose your benefits. You will be able to keep seeing your same doctor. And that's not the case in a lot of areas. He didn't quite finish that sentence.
And I think it's always unfortunate. We've seen it with presidents over the years. I mean, absolute statements are impossible to validate.
Yeah.
And I think because there were so many challenges around it, you know, it's that assertion of don't worry, things aren't going to change, when in fact they have to change as a result of this. The better statement in all of this is things will shift, but you have to believe that they're going to shift in a way that helps you. Some of you may not be able to see the same doctor, but you'll be able to see doctors of equal qualification. I mean, making statements that you can validate, and when you, it's like the no new taxes. Whenever you do absolute statements,
mission accomplished.
You know. When there are absolute statements, it's almost impossible, because then also you become a target for just trying to find a hole in that statement.
It's an opportunity. We were talking just a moment ago. We were talking about puppies.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, you can't have that with kids. And what was your thought?
About the third dog? About, or the third trial?
About the puppy. You said, oh, you can't tell me that. I will.
Oh,
I'm going to steal this thing if I have to.
What's the pride thing? You know, I mean, I was told I couldn't get the dog, so I was going to say, no matter what, I'm going to get the dog, even if getting the dog is the wrong decision.
Understood.
Which, by the way, it was.
Agreed.
But I love animals.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, where my guest is Kirsten Todd. She runs a company by the name of Liberty Group Ventures. You can reach her at
www.libertygroupventures.com.
She is a risk management mitigation specialist who works with Fortune 5 companies, 500 companies, excuse me, Fortune
just the five.
Just the five, just the top five. And it's not even, doesn't even have to be the top. If they're a Fortune company, any company.
And Fortune is defined in all sorts of ways.
There you go. There you go. You know, one big thing that you're into and work a lot with is cyber.
Yes.
You've had a lot to do with the framework of a lot of initiatives that the government has put forth with regard to cyber. Let's talk about protecting our critical infrastructure. NIST just released their framework for voluntary changes to be made in the cybersecurity world to protect our critical infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Do we trust it?
So, full disclosure, I'm working with NIST on it.
Okay.
And so the president released the executive order back in February. And for all the time that I've spent in government, in the executive branch and the legislative branch, I will say that this has been the most thorough, intellectually rigorous, disciplined process to create something that I've ever been a part of. I was a part of the legislation, drafting the legislation to create DHS, all of the processes, and NIST has held a standard on this that has been impressive and that everybody has stepped back to look at and say, wow, you've followed through on everything that you said that you were going to do. So what they've done is they've reached out to the private sector to say, what do you need? What do you want? What are your challenges? They've put forth different ideas, but have been very transparent about how do you, you know, where does this fit into what you need? How does this fit into how you operate? While addressing the key elements to the executive order, which include prioritization, flexibility, cost effectiveness. And so industry was informed early on back in February and April, we're going to do this process. We're going to ask you to be a part of it. So essentially, if at the end of this process, you're not happy with it and you haven't showed up at the workshops, you haven't reached out to NIST, that's kind of your fault. And those who have been a part of it have been very pleased with the response that NIST has given. And so much so that when journalists have reached out to write articles on this, you know, I've learned, just as a consultant, that they've had to really search for people who actually weren't part of the process to get any kind of negative feedback. People are obviously going to say, this doesn't align completely with what I would want, and it's not going to be able to be perfect, but that it certainly addresses all of it. So when you ask how, if it can be trusted, in trusting this, you're trusting the work of NIST, which I think is a tremendous organization, but industry. Industry has really given input to this in a tremendous way. Some industry is already implementing it.
So NIST, a government entity, obviously, a government entity was the same, not necessarily the same entity, but there was a government arm that helped create healthcare.gov.
Yes.
Healthcare.gov, we know how well that went over at this point and is a work in progress and will get better.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen the cover of Bloomberg Business Week, but there's a failing to load picture of our president with a little spinning window there saying, it's coming, don't worry, it'll be here in a second.
Right.
There are those who may say that they built this. Why would I want to now expose my commercial entity to something that NIST is saying, oh, you should probably go this way?
Well, so there are two things. First of all, it would be a shame for all of government to be painted with the brush of one failure. The same way that I think it's a shame that government intel officers, security officers are tainted with the brush of Edward Snowden. I mean, these are, you know, you cannot, unfortunately, the exceptional.
They are the bane of USIS's existence right now.
The anomaly becomes the face of what is not actually the norm.
Right.
The second part of this that's very important is that this is a voluntary framework. This is not mandated. This is a proposal for how to do it. And a recommendation for if you're a part of the critical infrastructure and you're looking to protect your cybersecurity, here is a process and a procedure, a method to employ. And whether or not you are anticipating if this becomes a regulation or standard, it doesn't really, we don't know where that's going. But the point is that right now this is voluntary, so you make that choice. Having said that, I think that everybody who's been a part of this process and NIST itself has gone to tremendous lengths to ensure that this does go deep. And they're pretty happy that they weren't asked to do healthcare.gov. And I think that, you know, if all government programs are tainted at all, you know, any type of computer-based program is tainted with healthcare.gov, that would be a shame because I don't believe that's the norm.
I know part of this regulation does account for the upgrade of government computers, which right now are woefully outdated. That in conjunction with the voluntary recommendations from NIST, I believe will turn things around. Now, it's voluntary. If someone doesn't participate in the workshops, someone doesn't toe the line, so to speak, does NIST have the ability prior to it becoming a regulation? Because I would imagine it will be at some point. It's going to make sense for it to become a regulation. Does NIST have the ability to go to the private sector and say, hey, Mr. Power Company owner, steps B through F, you're kind of doing wrong. And the power company guy goes, it's voluntary, buddy. What do you want me to do?
Well, and I think that's the case, is that it is voluntary. So NIST doesn't have any kind of enforcing authority with this. And NIST is working very closely with DHS. And where this comes down to is providers of critical infrastructure protection and critical infrastructure suppliers have an authority, a responsibility to make sure that they've got their system as secure as possible.
Sure.
It would certainly make sense for those involved in it to hook onto something that the federal government is endorsing and that they could have been a part of to say, this is what we need. And there's also an economies of scale here. There's an efficiency. If enough people work together on something like this, then one company isn't burdened with doing it all by themselves. I think a key component to this is that it talks about small and medium-sized businesses that are involved in critical infrastructure provision. And by everybody coming together along sort of a supply chain, that you're in that efficiency of working together, you're helping mitigate your own risk as well as becoming more efficient as an organization.
All right, you got me believing.
Believe.
I'm in.
Hope we can believe in.
I'm in line. I think I'll fall in line with everyone else and follow their recommendations. Something else, Kirsten Todd, who is the owner of Liberty Group Ventures, something else that you've been involved in is risk.
Mm-hmm.
Risk, handling risk. Sandy Hook, you were involved in deeply with what happened up in Sandy Hook. Yeah. and helping cope and fix and determine what's next. Since then, there have been a lot of shootings. New Jersey, a shopping mall.
Yes.
Up in New Jersey. What's the other one?
Navy Yard.
Thank you. The Navy Yard, right here in our backyard.
Yep.
You know, what kind of advice are you passing along to customers who are now saying, to your customers who are now saying, am I open to this? Is this going to happen to me? Do you have to psychologically profile every single employee now? And apparently that didn't work. USIS, again, involved in this one. What kind of advice are you passing along to your constituents?
Well, there are a lot of elements to this issue, those which are the very practical business ones and then the emotional ones. And in looking at businesses, so clearly we're still doing a lot with school security. That's a passion of mine for a lot of reasons, in helping universities look at security and safety more strategically. And it's informing universities, campuses, entities that are dealing with this or companies to say, you know, you've got to really look at your security infrastructure of your company in making it resilient. Because what is clear is that you're not going to be able to prevent everything from happening. You can't anticipate what's going to happen, who's going to come through your door. What you do need to know and what you do need to make sure of is that you have structures in place to contain an incident, to educate and make sure that your staff, your employees, your administration has an awareness about what they need to do in a crisis so that they can make the right decisions. You and I talked a little less than a year ago about the teachers at Sandy Hook and the fact that they were so well trained that they prevented that incident from being mm-hmm. much worse than it could have been. And so companies, campuses, whatever institution it is, they have more of a responsibility now than ever before to ensure that they're taking the appropriate steps, not just to have a plan in place, but to make sure that plan is exercised and to ensure that everybody who's a part of their organization, whether officially, part-time, contractor, knows what to do in a crisis like that. Because what is clear is that we're not going to prevent everything.
Whenever something like that comes up, the talk of arming teachers, arming pilots, arming TSA agents most recently. Mm-hmm. And I know that I heard an interview recently with a TSA agent who didn't want to be named and said, don't give us guns.
Yeah.
That's a big mistake. I hear now in the industry, the airline industry, there are pilots who have concealed weapon permits and provided the airline they work for will permit it, can carry a gun in the cockpit. How do you feel about teachers, airlines, and the potential of TSA agents along with the airport security now carrying guns?
I think carrying weapons in response to this is a band-aid to a broader problem, and it's not the solution. If individual entities determine that it's something they want to do, and I'm not talking about schools yet, but TSA agents and pilots, then they have to go back a few steps to ensure that those people that are in those roles have a completely different set of training and guidelines. You're dealing then with new position descriptions.
Right.
And so you have to put a lot of resources, if you're that organization, into that new position that you're creating, because it's not just about the bolt-on of a gun to everybody you've already got there. The training and the hiring process and the background and all of that is a very different procedure.
Everyone's now a police officer at that point.
Exactly. And everybody's not trained to be one.
Right.
And so there has to be it is not appropriate, I believe, to just say now pilots can carry guns.
Right.
Because that's not the position that they filed for and they applied for. They applied to fly a plane, not to shoot a gun. And so if you're going to add that on, then you've got a completely different role that you're now hiring for, and you have to look at.
I think in the case of the pilots, they are pilots who live in a state where they are permitted to carry to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and our gun enthusiasts already have their concealed weapons permit, so they have some training,
yeah.
enough to be able to carry the weapon, let's put it that way, and the airline is allowing them to do that in their plane. I don't know that I'd want to be in a plane. Knowing that air marshals have guns on planes, and I don't know who they are, and recently there was a story of a drunk air marshal on a plane. I don't know that I feel comfortable with anybody having a gun on the plane.
Well, and if you're going to allow pilots to carry guns, you need to train them into how to handle a closed environment with 120 people. And so, I mean, it's an interesting situation in the sense that oftentimes pilots are retired military,
right.
and so they have a different set of experience and skills and all of that. But I still believe there needs to be additional training for how to handle a closed environment situation with a weapon. Arming teachers, I've always felt strongly that that's not the right answer, mm-hmm. because you're in a closed environment with children and kids, and there, if you get to that point where a teacher needs to draw a gun, a lot of other issues have failed.
Student, and so Jimmy's acting up in the back of the room.
Well, and you just don't.
Teacher X is having a bad day,
and that's just—it's a horrible failure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
that's
and that's not what you want to deal with. And I think, you know, I give a lot of credit to the anonymous TSA agent, because that to me is one of the starkest examples of, if you're going to arm TSA agents, you have to wipe the slate clean and completely rehire and do different kinds of training. That's not what they're trained to do. They're not trained to handle that. And quite frankly, you didn't want a TSA agent pulling out a gun and responding to Ciencia. So.
Does screening process now need to be expanded to outside the doors of the airport?
So I think it's a great question. And I think it's one that we're really going to have to look at as far as perimeter security for airports.
Mm-hmm. I found it interesting that the gentleman, unfortunately, who lost his life was a behavioral specialist, someone who was trained to look and identify odd behaviors.
Yeah.
And
we
does
just
that
don't
type
know
of person need to be outside the airport now?
Stopping well,
the parking lot.
It's looking at how
taking
do you
your parking tickets. At the, you know,
yes.
Does that profiling begin the moment you drive on the perimeter?
Well, and it's an interesting issue of, you know, what are the elements that you're looking for? Is there a lighter level of perimeter screening that's now going to be required for airports or major airports?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something to look into. And I think that when we're looking at airport security, it's worth reviewing as far as what our perimeter looks like for those types of closed environments.
All right. Very good. Her name is Kirsten Todd. The company is called Liberty Group Ventures, libertygroupventures.com. If you had one bit of information that you could pass along to, say, that company owner that, and we're talking about two different topics now, the company that may not necessarily want to adopt the framework, the voluntary framework, or say the school principal. And we're two different topics again. The school principal who is on the fence about whether to install the bulletproof glass at the front door, or do I give my teachers vests now? That kind of thing. What would you say to both of those groups of people?
So starting with the company, mm-hmm. I would have the company take a look. The point of the framework is it guides companies through a self-assessment process to say, what am I doing? What's working? What's not working? And draw from the knowledge and the experience of larger companies that have the resources to invest in this to say, what can I pull from this? What are my lessons learned? And the point of the framework in instituting this process that they lay out, that the framework lays out, is evaluating cost benefit. And with the resources that I have, how can I allocate my resources towards cybersecurity? And again, you know, it's sort of looking at Homeland Security post 9/11. Nothing happened on the Homeland for so long. And so did that represent success, or did nothing just happen? And that's the challenge with cybersecurity as well. If nothing happens, you don't know if you've succeeded. The benefit or the cost is that you can count on the fact that something will happen to your computer infrastructure,
right.
whether it's just an outage, whether it's a natural disaster, whether someone hacks into it, and making sure you have the appropriate steps in place is something that your company has to do. How you do that is up to you, but the framework should be something that supports that and helps you run more efficiently and effectively. It's not supposed to be a burden.
All right. How about the school principal out there who's debating whether to arm the teachers or not? I'm going to go rogue. Everybody gets a 50 caliber.
Well, so again, I go back a few steps. I'd have that school principal take a look at what their environment is, where they are, and do a risk assessment. Mm-hmm. What are our greatest risks? What are our greatest challenges? Do we have processes in place? Have we educated our teachers and our students appropriately? And what's the feedback that we're getting? How do people feel? Are they feeling safe? Do they feel like they know what they're doing? And are we exercising our procedures enough so that if something happens, when something happens, regardless of the scale, we tend to focus on active shooter because that's the most destructive, but there are a lot of other things that are not intentional. If you have a hurricane that comes through, I mean, we see about the tornadoes that happen in the Midwest, how you handle all of those things. And so your first step is to do your own risk assessment. And I think, you know, that crosses cyber, that crosses all of these risk issues, whether you're a school, a company, and whether you're dealing with your physical infrastructure or your cyber infrastructure.
You know, I didn't even think weather related. You're right. Hurricanes, tornadoes, you know, earthquakes, things, acts of nature that could put you and your company or your family or whomever at risk.
Any incident that requires you to act very quickly.
Yeah.
And the key to those situations is you don't want to be making subjective decisions in a time of crisis. You want as many of those decisions decided upon, predetermined, so that you're not in a time of panic having to make choices that are risky and life-threatening.
We did a big, I guess it was last month, middle of last month, we did a big earthquake drill here. Yep. And I know it happened in a lot of places around on the East Coast. You know, like 10:17 in the morning, we all had to get under our desks. They were like, earthquake, earthquake, and everybody climbed. And most people weren't doing it. I'm like, when in time comes, you're going to regret that you don't know how to climb under your own desk.
Right. Well, and I mean, I think that's a very simple way of looking at it, which is exactly right, because until you go through the motions, you don't know, is your desk big enough for you to go under?
Exactly.
I mean, it's very simple, which is why we exercise that
stuff.
Women
are like, but I'm wearing a skirt. I'm like, okay, well, when that monitor falls on you and crushes you, you'll be sad that A, wore a skirt, and B, didn't climb under this. Not only that, there's cameras everywhere. They can see that you're not getting under the desk.
Yeah.
What, are you crazy?
The other
this
thing
place is transparent.
Windows everywhere.
Exactly.
I mean, I think I shared this with you last year because this struck me so strongly after 9/11 is the companies, the one of the primary companies that had all of the training in place that had exercised evacuation of the World Trade Towers had an internal process that said if something were to happen, listen to our messaging, and that should drive your decision. And these are the things you need to pay attention to. And as a result, when the towers were hit, the members of that company made their own decisions immediately, and they all decided to evacuate. And what's striking is they were evacuating when they were being told to shelter in place by the loudspeaker.
Right.
But they, because they felt that they had enough knowledge about the situation to make a judgment on their own that said to them, it's time to evacuate, they were able to do that. And I think what you want is people to be educated enough so that in a crisis, they know exactly what they're doing and to the extent possible, and they're not in that state of decision-making about an environment that a lot of those decisions could be predetermined.
Her name is Kirsten Todd. The company is Liberty Group Ventures, develops and executes risk management strategies for Fortune 500, 400, 300, 200, any Fortune companies or any company out there. Look her up, libertygroupventures.com. You will not be disappointed, trust me. Kirsten, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Alan.
To learn more about Bloomberg Government, simply call us at 877-498-3587. Bloomberg Government.
Bloomberg Government.
Where business and politics come together. And with that, we put the wraps on this week's edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at BGov. Follow me on Twitter at Alan L. Scott. I'll catch you again next Thursday with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.